This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 12th of May, 2021. And a brief note on the program today is a normal, of course, daily podcast. Lucky Danish employees of banks get 2 days off tomorrow and Friday, but we have recorded one podcast so far, myself and Peter, looking at green transformation stocks and value versus growth and a number of the great, Peter's discussion on where the market is, how the market is changing and shifting in terms of these different themes. We've already recorded that one. That one will be out tomorrow. And hopefully we'll have another one for you on Friday with CIO Sten Jakobsen on inflation, which I think is a topic that's certainly heating up, and especially where the Fed is with its policy mix. And we'll probably touch on that as today as well, with increasingly widespread criticism of where the Fed is versus what the economy is doing. There was a piece out on the Wall Street Journal from Druckenmiller criticizing the Fed for its policy and risking financial asset bubbles as we have this unprecedented accommodation despite basically a white hot economy. All right, let's get back to the market action. We had another week session yesterday up until around the opening and not long after the opening. And then we saw quite a strong rally. So in the case of the sort of the sectors that were leading the stock market lower, these rallied the most yesterday, and things like Tesla coming back, ARK, et cetera, Peter. The broader market was a bit weaker, closed the day down still almost 1% on the S&P cash. And then we had a very weak Asian session overnight. But what's your take here? It looked like a pivotal session, potentially, just on that note of the more speculative stuff trying to make a comeback.
Yeah, so you and I had the conversation yesterday, and I pointed out maybe we should have put on here on slide two a NASDAQ 100 index with the volume bars as well, because what was interesting about the day before yesterday when we had the big sell-off, the risk-off in NASDAQ, it happened on an average to actually below average volume day, suggesting very weak participation. And then yesterday we have this inverted hammer from yesterday's price action. We had a massive rebound and rally into the close all day through the session. And that happened on an above average volume. So to me, as I said to you, John, I think that suggests that you still have much more marginal buyers willing to buy the dips on any occasion than otherwise. But we are trading a little bit lower today. Let's see what happens. We had that Asian session, as you mentioned. That's on slide four. I'll jump a little bit here. We had on slide four TSMC, which was down 9% at one point. And the curvature of the sell-off during the session was, I think you and I talked about it, John. We've seen this so many times before, you know, very much algorithmic trading style. And then also a lot of stocks being taken out. It looks like there was a leverage position in TSMC because it fully recovered again. And there was these ridiculous headlines on Bloomberg because your journalist always trying to find a stupid narrative. Sometimes it's just noise. And they said, oh, there's rising case numbers in Taiwan. Sure, there is a little bit of rising case numbers, but I don't think we are at any point close to a panic mode yet on daily new cases. But it's something we should watch because we know Taiwan is a bottleneck on semiconductor manufacturing. So if in fact they get a worsening of the COVID-19 wave, then obviously it could be an impact. Coming to Europe on slide three, so we are back paddling here a little bit. I've drawn the two red lines on the slide here, on the chart, slide three. I think this is the key area. We've been here a couple of times in the last couple of weeks, and we need to hold this area. Otherwise, I think we're opening up a pretty wide highway for a deeper correction, especially if these inflation narratives are tilting more and more in favor of more sustained inflation instead of the transitory inflation, which is the narrative the central bank wants us to have.
Yeah, and on that note, just I won't talk about FX. The FX is a bit boring. I think the dollar is basically trying to figure out what to do here. We had the weak payrolls number, but if we look at, you know, type of things that Druckenmiller is talking about with the Fed's policy, how the underlying economy is shaping up, and the employment market itself, it's a bit silly to me that we're still have reacted to that April payrolls print as the one sort of miss in a sea of indications that the employment market, if you have a pulse and you're not on drugs, basically you can get a job, especially if you have any remote set of skills. And you can see charts like the JOLTS opening, JOLTS jobs opening survey, which was out yesterday. And I have this on slide six. It's on the left there, record highs there. And you can see that chart has gone vertical. The great Wolf Richter over at wallstreet.com, always recommend that site for just at all times to have a great perspective on things that are going on. I mean, look at the manufacturing job openings chart there on the right. And that is, however, just a small note, there is a comeback from quite a shock to the economy, to say the least. I think a lot of this is in the shale patch, but still, you can get a job if you want one. And if you're not happy, to just sit on your COVID benefits. And that, Althea, is leading to this sort of tension, because we have that reaction. We have the Fed sort of being priced to sitting on their hands a little bit longer, but long yields are starting to pick up quite aggressively again, especially in Europe. We had the Bunds yesterday closing at the new cycle high, negative 16 basis points. There is that sort of pesky little high at minus 15 basis points from just after the pandemic breakout. But how much potentially do you think there is for a deepening of this selling in Europe?
I think that there is, John, not only because we have seen a sell-off yesterday amid inflation fears, but also because while yesterday the European sovereign banks was selling off, the US treasuries were stable. Mm. So basically what he's telling us is that the inflation fears are driving European sovereigns as much as they could drive US treasuries. And as soon as we have US treasuries yields resuming their rise, we will see European bond yields rising as well. But I think that, John, what is interesting here, and you can see that in slide 7, that we have European yields reaching some important pivotal resistance lines. So the 10-year German Bund yields are now around minus 0.15. If they break above this resistance level, they could rise fast towards 0%. And also 10-year French OATS yields are around 0.22%, which is a level previously seen in June 2019. And also very interesting, 10 years Italian BTP yields now are at the same level as Greek 10 years yields at 0.99%.
And then we're waiting for two key factors today. The CPI release out of the U.S. expected at 3.6%. That would be almost a 10-year high. There was only a couple of prints above that in the 2011 timeframe when oil prices were going up suddenly above $100 again. There's that. And we have the 10-year auction today. Do you think today is the day for a new big move? We've seen it sort of coming back from this jobs data quite smartly, the yields. Or are we just maybe stuck in the range here, and then maybe it's more action in Europe and elsewhere?
Well, it could be the day where we see some strong CPI number. And when I look at CPI numbers today, I will be looking at the monthly data, John, because the yearly data obviously are going to be high. But this data is going to be transitory. What might not be transitory is the monthly CPI data. So if we see the economists estimated to be coming out around 0.2%, if we see a surprise on the upside in these numbers, then we might see US treasuries resuming to sell off. But in slide number 8, I think that you guys should have a look at it, because I've lighted some important resistance and support level. So right now, the 10-year yields are trading basically flat around 1.6%. And they have two chances. Either they're going to fall towards 1.40 and then bounce back to resume their rise towards 2%, or otherwise they are going to go straight towards that 2%.
Looks pretty pivotal here. There was an interesting comment from the Fed's Bullard out yesterday, noting some of the first signs I've seen of any Fed official indicating they're living a little bit uncomfortable with inflation, and saying maybe not all of these price rises were transitory. But Lyle Brainard of the Vice of the Board of Governors indicating sort of this very much stay put and not do anything for now. But one thing that's interesting in terms of price pressures, because it's odd, or is this pipeline situation in the U.S. We have this hack. We haven't mentioned it yet on the podcast. This hack of a massive pipeline that transmits or transports gasoline from Texas to the East Coast. And oh, you think, oh, limits high prices, but actually for oil, it can actually suppress prices because then the refineries can't get their product to market. Is that how it works?
Absolutely, John. And I mean, it's, first of all, it's incredibly embarrassing that we almost, we're 4 days into this hack and we still haven't got supplies fully reestablished. That basically means we're on the East Coast, people are running out of gasoline. That basically means refineries have to cut the production of gasoline because demand is coming down. And that's obviously leaving more oil in the tanks. And that's putting a little bit of pressure on the oil price today. So it's actually having a negative impact. But generally, we've seen a phenomenal rally this week again in several commodities. We've seen the highs in copper, iron ore, steel. We've seen the palm oil. We've seen also emissions, which I'm going to talk about in a second. But oil is just basically had a flat week. And it is due to this the pipeline, but also I think the virus outbreaks in Asia, which is just still simply not yet under control. So it's creating this short-term uncertainty about the demand outlook. And we still have to remember that there is expectation for a massive jump in demand into the second half. But the further it takes before we actually get that jump, the picture for the years as a whole is going to be lower than what previously was expected. So market are very bullish on oil, but just be cautious at this moment in time. And then I just want to another indicator just here on slide 10 is just the time spreads. We're seeing the spread between the first and the second months in Brent is now down to the lowest since March. That's basically indicating a market that's starting to soften. Today we got the weekly inventory report from the EIA. I got put in the expectations there, and we also got monthly oil market report from the IEA that's coming out sometime this morning. So that should be very interesting to watch. And something we don't talk about that often, but critically important to companies and industry in Europe is the cost of emission. We've seen here on slide 9 that the carbon emission breached 53 euros a ton yesterday, and it's basically just been a non-stop rally almost since the second quarter or fourth quarter of last year. We have an important day ahead of us because there is an announcement from the EU Commission at 6 p.m. Brussels time tonight. We're basically going to announce the number of permits in circulation and how they see the supply going forward. So the market is really, obviously, has been pricing in a continued tightening of available supply. And you have to remember, if you are running into a deficit and you cannot get the permits you need to pay a penalty of 110 euros. So that's really the alternative for companies. So there is obviously a limit to how much these can go. But at this moment in time, it's still been driven by very strong momentum. Two other reasons for the fact that this is going up. It's been very cold in Europe so far this season. It's driving up demand for both gas and coal. It's keeping gas out of storage we should see an increase in gas storage right now. We're not. That's keeping prices elevated. And that's elevating the carbon emission price as well.
And you've got your gas storage chart there on the lower right of that slide showing where we are relative to the average. We need to get into the build season soon.
Exactly. We are. We should have been into the build season now for the past almost months, but we're still just dragging along because it's just simply been too cold.
And then just the brief version of this, Peter, we just had a conversation right before we jumped on the podcast here about this carbon emission situation. At some point, these emissions prices get too high. And unless you have a protective trade policy, you're going to outsource your dirty, let's call it dirty manufacturing elsewhere in the world. A lot of this is happening in China. So first of all, how much does a doubling or something, if I don't know if you can quantify this, of carbon emission costs, how much does that impact the bottom line on a heavy industrial company? And have you seen any rumblings that the Europe wants to do anything about this? I mean, about the risk of importing.
I have seen a couple of bits of information from Eastern Europe that there are some heavy manufacturing companies in Eastern Europe that have difficulty paying these carbon emission payments. So I think we're getting to levels where there is some pain points, at least for some producers, with thin margins or low scale. So and that makes it tricky. But as I said to you, I think it's absolutely key. And I think the green transformation, I think, is a path to more decentralized manufacturing. We talked about it at lunch yesterday, right? Mm. And trade policies, because otherwise it don't work. It just goes elsewhere, basically.
And if we just should finish off this section, because one thing it could lead to is clearly that the EU will will make a change in their views on uranium and nuclear power. There has always been a report sent to the EU Commission back in April, which they're still digesting, and it basically recommended that they should regard nuclear power on level with the green alternatives. So if that's if that obviously would be another way to bring down the emission in Europe, and it's something that uranium market already has had caught a bit on the back of with all the increase in capacity we're already seeing in Asia.
All right, and let's round out the space with a little bit on earnings. And before that, you have this interesting thoughts on Palantir and Bitcoin. The whole space is heating up again. We've got new record highs in Ethereum overnight, came back very quickly from that previous little story and blip. And the Bitcoin dominance, interesting, fading down to 42.2%, I believe it was. The whole space, $2.5 trillion in market cap. What are your thoughts here? I don't know if you want to talk about it now as well, but this interesting this move to start this, what was it called, Block One or a company?
Yeah. So Palantir yesterday reported, I would say, mild Q1 and have earnings and had a mild Q2 forecast. The shares were also initially down in pre-market session. That's also what you see on slide 11. It dipped or opened gap lower, but then it quickly resumed. And that was because Palantir's management said that they are now going to accept payment in Bitcoin, which I find very funny since Palantir's biggest customer is the US government, which I think, you know, stands a little bit in contrast to Bitcoin and their objective. And then they said that potentially wanted to add it to their balance sheet, and that basically created a rally in Palantir. And it came around the time when, you know, Peter Thiel is one of the co-founders of Palantir Technologies, have been a proponent of cryptocurrencies for a long while, also recently warned that China might have a huge interest in crypto, you know, threatening the dollar reserve system. But now he's launching with other famous billionaires a new exchange, a crypto exchange called Bullish Global, which will launch with $10 billion in fresh capital and utilize this idea of having no spreads on trading, but an automated market making system where winners and losers are pooling all their gains and then distribute that. So it's basically a cooperative model in market making, if you will. We can talk more about that in coming podcast. I also find it quite interesting with this whole crypto that we always talk about bubble stocks in equities, but now on Monday you had a new company, new coin that was going public, Internet Computer, it's called, and it's now already worth $45 billion, and the company has zero revenue. So I'm just coming to a point where, yes, I accept that there are pockets of bubble stocks, et cetera, and equities, but I think we haven't seen anything like it compared to what's going on in crypto. And you had the SEC yesterday warning investors about excess volatility and speculative fever and the lack of oversight and regulation of cryptocurrency in general. And you have a new chair of the SEC, which is called the Crypto Mom. So I think there's a lot of conflicting signals in the regulatory oversight of this. And as you pointed out, John, the overall crypto space has gone to a $2.5 trillion. I just wonder how big it can get before it really begins to be regulated.
Well, certainly someone has to respect the risk of two-way volatility on, you know, a regulatory broadside or some indication, but we'll just watch it in awe and see what develops next. It's to me, one of the interesting things as well is the Bitcoin dominance cratering. We talked a little bit about that on a special edition podcast, but that's a side issue. That 60,000 level in Bitcoin looks key for whether that particular coin moves higher as well. Earnings still on the docket this week. We're certainly not over with there. Anything you want to pull out of this slide 12?
Not much. Toyota was fine, down 2% in Japanese trading. That rebounded great. And interesting enough, a lot of the other car makers, including Ford, we've talked about that, is losing 50% of their production in this quarter. Toyota's CFO said that they don't have any meaningful issues with semiconductors. So Japan seems to be quite self-reliant, especially Toyota, which I find fascinating for the further development of, you know, fragmentize our global supply chain even more.
Well, it just suggests they didn't take it to the wire or to the extreme with just-in-time principles and,
exactly.
And you know, getting getting deliveries for just a month's worth of semiconductors at a time or something, but somehow they were able to secure their own supplies.
Exactly. And Allianz, I want to highlight, because insurance companies and banks are doing quite well in this reflationary environment. So have a look at that. They're posting very strong results. Tomorrow is the big day, so I'll shut up on earnings, and we'll have a we are not in here actually on Thursday. So I will comment on Alibaba and Walt Disney, Bilibili, Xpeng and Airbnb on Monday. I probably will do some commenting on Twitter as well. So you can watch that there.
All right. And then on the calendar, how we've basically already pulled out the key events today. Claire Dowd speaking, not expecting any change of tune, but of course we need to be very sensitive to anything new in the rhetoric there. The CPI data up today, already talked about, Treasury auction as well. And then various the oil inventories report out of the U.S. and the monthly report there. Tomorrow, just to flag it once again, Bank of Canada Speaker Macklem out. He could after this very aggressive move in the Canadian dollar, maybe indicate some discomfort that I think that would be a risk for Canadian dollar bulls, especially given the two-year yield spread has not really confirmed where we are with this move, at least in cycle terms. 30-year bond auction tomorrow as well. And then Friday rounds out the week macro-wise with the U.S. retail sales number. Interesting to see the delta there after that huge March surge on the big $1,400 U.S. stimulus checks. That is a wrap for today. Stay tuned for our special edition podcast in the coming couple of days, and we'll be back with our regular programming next Monday. Take care out there and have a great weekend when you do get there.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.